Welcome to the Fatigue Super Conference. And for this conversation, I'm talking with Dr. Taz Bhatia. And Dr. Taz is a board certified integrative medicine physician and wellness expert who gained national recognition as best-selling author of the book Superwoman RX, which I was having a good read of last night, and integration of Eastern medical wisdom with modern science, along with her unique power type discovery, has led to feature segments on Today Show, Dr. Oz, Live with Kelly and Ryan, and eventually the premiere of her own PBS special, which I think is always like the big achievement in our world. Superwoman RX with Dr. Taz, dubbed a superwoman in her own right. Dr. Taz is committed to empowering women to radically transform their lives through personalized lifestyle, diet, exercise, self-care, and relationship strategies to help them rediscover their own superpowers. So, Dr. Taz, welcome, and thank you for talking to me today.
Thank you.
I'd love to start, if you don't mind, with a little bit about you and your journey to integrative medicine. I know you had some of your own health challenges in your late 20s, which I think perhaps changed your direction as a medic to broaden your interests. So tell us a bit about that.
Sure. You know, I never expected to do this. I never expected that this would be my choice and my career and all that other good stuff. I was an adrenaline junkie, I guess is probably the best way to say it. I loved the ICU. I loved emergency medicine. My first job out of residency was actually in emergency medicine and doing lots of shifts and day shift and night shift and all that other good stuff. And I loved it. I didn't have a problem with it. But slowly, and I think it may have started even earlier than I was conscious of, but somewhere in my years of working in the emergency room in those first 3 or 4 years right after residency, my health was really declining. And I went from, you know, just being really excited and energized. I've always been high energy, always, you know, up to a million things at one time. That wasn't anything new, but was getting to a point where my energy was off. I was losing my hair. My joints were swelling and just not feeling very well, but very much in the mindset like many women today and many people today, where I just had to power through. I just had to get through this somehow. So, you know, we just keep putting one foot in front of the other. It really ignored a lot of my symptoms, really honestly didn't pay attention to them. And finally, it was patience, quite honestly. And my husband, who was I was dating at the time, and my mom, probably those three factors, who were like, look, something's wrong with you. You're not, you know, you don't look the same. You're not acting the same. And then patients would talk to me, but they'd be staring up at my scalp rather than like paying attention to what I was saying. And, you know, it was just so distracting. So, you know, I finally took that step of admittance or acceptance, like if something is wrong with me. You know, my husband recently just had a health scare as well. And he also said, like, the first step is just acceptance. Like, hey, I've got a problem. And once you understand that you have a problem, then you start to open up and think, what do I do next? So, you know, for me to even get to I've got a problem took a really long time. I mean, it took probably a solid 2 years, maybe even 3 years, even though the issues might have been developing all the way back in medical school. So once I realized I had an issue, I started what many people do, right? They go to doctors. And so I went to one doctor after another doctor. In fact, I just got off a online visit right now with a patient who was basically told the same thing. You're crazy. You know, all your numbers are normal. Here's a medication for your hair. You need to do something. You're going to be bald in 20 years, you know, and all this other stuff. And it was just super disheartening and really frustrating. But I listened because I was still a conventional physician and, you know, still believed in the system, so to speak. And I listened and I took the medication. And the medication, many people know, it's spironolactone. It drops your blood pressure. Well, my blood pressure is already low. It's always been low. And again, not connected with myself, so not connecting the dots in my own health, but took the medication. I bottomed out big time while driving, got into a car wreck, and could have hurt somebody else or myself. But that was really where I'm like, I've got to figure this out. I've got to do something differently. This is not working. And this is after, you know, solid 90 days to 6 months of visiting different doctors and trying to get answers, and even traveling for doctors and things like that, much of what many of my patients go through today. So anyhow, long story short, I started studying because that's what we know how to do, you know. So I started studying, you know, Chinese medicine. I studied Ayurvedic medicine, At that time, the American Board of Holistic Medicine was a weekend course that you could go do, so I went and did that, and started to really open up to this world that I had never been exposed to before, and, you know, just it blew my mind, like, you know, all about nutrition and all about all these other systems and practices and things like that, and Chinese medicine drew me in the most, probably got the most results there, and those mentors and teachers were so wise, so eventually I became an acupuncturist, I became a certified nutrition specialist, and really implemented some of their wisdom into my own health. And it took a solid, probably another 2 years, but within about a year, you know, things started to reverse and change. Within another year and a half, I felt different and looked differently. And within 2 years, I was pretty much, you know, back to my, you know, hyperactive, annoying self. So, you know, it's just to say though, in that journey, and that entire journey is a long time now. And I still, when I tell the story, I lose the timeline, but it was a solid 10-year journey from maybe beginning to feel bad, to accepting that something's wrong, then starting to find answers, then getting the answers, and then putting the answers into action. We're talking about a decade is going by. But during that decade, of course, everyone around me is like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? What's happening? You know, I'm getting asked all these questions. And so as my sweet husband, he finally was like, you know what? I've watched you, you know, answer everyone's questions. He actually also encouraged me to do the fellowship in integrative medicine with Dr. Andy Weil out in Arizona. So I did that. And as I completed that, you know, and he was starting his dental practice, he really encouraged me. He was like, look, just use the back of my dental office, see a few patients here and there, you know, you can still do ER, you don't have to quit anything, and you can focus on the family. And I was like, yeah, I can be home by 3 and it'll be great. And so that was the intention. The intention was just to share knowledge and to, you know, help people. And I don't think either of us realized at the time what would happen next. And pretty quickly, that same experience that I had just resonated. And it took a year, but within a year of having this tiny little like thumbprint of a practice, that it became chaos, probably all I can say, where there are people sitting on the floor in the waiting room. You know, my husband would walk in his dental side, he's like, there's a line outside, what's going on, you know? And you know, and I would take over his dental chairs to do acupuncture in them. It was chaos. That's I look back and I laugh. I'm surprised he put up with it, and patients put up with it, but they were so desperate, you know, for answers and for solutions. So somewhere in those years, the media got a hold of us, and we just continued to grow and grow and grow. So obviously we have our own spaces, and we've actually honestly outgrown the spaces we're in now too, but we're just trying to be very deliberate with what our next step is. But it was quite the journey. And it's a journey that I see repeated, even though so many years have gone by so many people I meet and talk to, you know, whether it's personally or socially or in the exam room or it's when I'm lecturing or it's when I'm on TV. It's a journey that everyone's going through. It's a fragmented, broken healthcare system that is not open to answers. It's not really open to solutions. And so everyone's kind of left spinning plates and trying to figure out like really what their next step is and who to trust and who not to trust and who's out for the wrong reasons. And, you know, it's a scene. It's like a really bad movie with no ending. It's how I describe it, you know. So I'm just sad that, you know, my journey started almost 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago. And I don't really feel like, other than the burgeoning field of integrative functional medicine, I don't really feel like we've made much of forward movement, you know.
It's fascinating how you kind of went through your own journey, and without even really trying to put it out there, it just resonated, and that totally makes sense. And it sounds like it struck a chord with a lot of people having similar experiences. And I guess one of my questions for you is how common fatigue is in your practice. It sounds like it's super common. Is it one of the main complaints that people have, or I'd be interested to hear how common that is in your patient group.
So it was probably number one or number two, probably number one. It's probably the number one complaint in the practice. Probably number two is weight. Number three is more anxiety, depression would be my guess. And then number four, maybe pain, but it is up there. So, you know, and fatigue comes in so many different shapes and forms and sizes and all that other stuff. And it's really hard for people to figure it out. I was interviewing some experts this morning for my podcast, and they were talking about all the different symptoms that go with all these different conditions. And fatigue is a unifier, right? I mean, whether you have a hormone imbalance, a nutritional deficiency, you know, inflammation, you have mold toxicity or Lyme disease, fatigue is it's a unifier, you know?
Right.
So it's really hard for a patient with fatigue to isolate or to figure out where is my fatigue coming from and really what am I supposed to do about it?
And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that people have, right? That there's so many different potential causes for fatigue that it can be utterly overwhelming for the patient. And one of the things that I'm mindful with this online conference is that part of the intention is to highlight and illustrate all of these different facets and, you know, a number of which you just briefly mentioned. For people that you work with, what would you say are the top causes? Like, what are the, within all of that kind of complexity, what are some of the really strong, consistent themes that you're used to seeing?
That's such a great question. So let me set the stage of our practice for just a minute so that I can give everybody a little bit of perspective. So the practice is far from that thumbprint practice that I had started back in 2009. It's now 2 locations and 10 providers, and we're about 20,000 patients in collectively. So we have this really rich data to kind of mine from, you know, or this very diverse patient group to mine from in terms of understanding what's happening. And they are diverse. They're diverse in age. They're diverse in socioeconomic standard, you know, even though we don't take insurance, but people come from everywhere and believe in this and want this type of care. And so when we look at what is causing their fatigue, you know, you can fraction it out to women versus men versus children. There's a little bit of that. But if I had to speak in big generalizations, I would say probably the number one, most obvious, easiest, quickest fix is nutrition and nutritional deficiencies. Number two is tied directly to number one, it's gut health. And number three is tied to one and two, it's inflammation. And then it's hormone balance. And then it's some of these other things that are more esoteric, you know, that you'll hear some of the experts debate and talk about. But I would say it's nutrition, nutrition, nutrition. And then what is your gut doing with all that nutrition, even when you do get the nutrition piece right? I think those are probably one and two.
And what's the general reaction? So when someone comes in who is, you know, struggling with fatigue, but kind of functioning in life and trying to hang on to perhaps the person that they're used to being, which is a kind of, it's a terrible word, but kind of normal person that is right. Not kind of looking at their life in this way.
Right.
When someone's coming in expecting a pill or expecting a kind of quick fix solution, and you're saying, look, we need to look at your food. We need to look at what you're eating. How does that tend to land with your patients?
It just kind of depends on where they are in the journey. I mean, I think many people without lab work and without data are skeptical, quite honestly, right? I mean, there's this mentality that, but how could it possibly, here's what I hear the most. It's how could it be food when I eat so healthy? That's what I hear the most, you know? I eat whole grains. I eat this or that. I'm gluten-free or I do all these other things. How could it be food? I'm really meticulous about how I eat. But that's where we start getting into the world of, you know, you can read the latest blog or read the latest research and follow down that train, you know, but at the same time, if it's not right for you and the genetic profile and the cultural context and all the other 50,000 things that make you you and make you unique, then you're missing the mark. You may not need to be vegan. You may not need to be gluten-free. You may not tolerate whole grains, you know, but it's really understanding what your core issues are and then dialing into that to develop the right diet and nutrition for you. So I think that's the biggest issue is that people get very like protective and, what's the right word? They get very like staunch about their food, right? Food is very like, you know, well, I do this, you know, I've always say like, you know, don't cross a vegan, you know, don't mess with a vegetarian and don't argue about gluten with gluten-free folks. You know, it's just, they are staunch. So that can be an issue for sure. So, you know, one of the things that I always try to do, we try to give them data. We try to help them connect the dots. We try to help them put all the pieces together. And hopefully that gives them some of the ability to really understand that food is the foundation.
I think what you're saying is really interesting. It's it's almost like it becomes an identity, right? And I remember years ago, right in the, you know, when we first started Optum Health Clinic, and we had a lot of people that were coming, which were vegan, vegetarian, and it was clear that they needed more, a lot more protein in their diet. And there would be a lot of resistance to that. And we kind of started to use the term, it was almost like food fascism. It was this kind of like a kind of identity that people take on different sides of that debate and argument. And it can be tough to get people to make changes with that. But when you see people engage in that process and start to kind of, and I know, in fact, it might be a good place to bring in, you have a system of five different power types, right? And that, and I know that probably informs part of how you kind of, you create plans and you work with people. But I'd be curious as to people start to make these kind of changes, what you start to see, but maybe it'd be, yeah, be a good place just to kind of touch on some of how you categorize and how you understand people's experiences.
Definitely. So, you know, one of the biggest things I noticed as I got a little bit further into the practice is that this confusion, right? I'm going to follow this diet. I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to do that thing, or this is the right way to eat. And so as I was using my training in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine and what I already had from conventional medicine and my nutrition training and really trying to help people do this. And some people would do the testing and some won't, you know, I'm sure you've experienced that too. Not everyone wants to do a lot of testing. So I'm like, what could I give them that would be convincing? Like, how could I help them navigate this information, or what could we use? And I found that when I started becoming really intentional, what Chinese medicine was saying about somebody was very similar to what Ayurvedic medicine was saying about someone, which would then in turn match sort of the history and the physical, which would then match my lab values. You know what I mean? And you could start to line it all out, and these patterns started to emerge. And so the first time I like started to notice it, I'm like, wait a minute. And so then I started to track it. And if you tracked it, people fall into these patterns. They fall into these types. Now, within each pattern, just like any pattern, there's still uniqueness and individuality, right? But as a general, like if you're trying to give someone a starting point, a place to land, a place to begin, you know, if somebody is pitta, then they're also kind of liver meridian people. And then they also, we know, need to be off like dairy and gluten. And then because that's just too hard to digest, because inflammation is one of their core issues. And so anyhow, as I started to track it, write it down, create spreadsheets, like, you know, just sort of randomly do it on people when they weren't expecting it, I realized I had something. And that's when we came up with the five different types, because I felt like there were five key, there were probably three core types. And then there were these two other types that sort of were blends or fell in the middle. And so that's where I came up with the five types, and just thought that would be a great way to help people, at least women for now. I want to do the same for men and children, but at least help women like begin this journey back to themselves and like stop some of the noise and stop some of the chatter and understand really what they need to do. And I think it's resonated because so many people that have like followed the types and taken the test and then put the plan into action, we're like, oh my God, that was me. That's me. That really makes sense. So that's where these five, this idea of five key types comes from. And I want to continue to expand that concept a little bit further in the years to come and dive even more deeply into it, because I'm convinced that not understanding who you are is disempowering. You don't understand how to move from point A to point B, because again, you're sort of bebopping around the world without a map or without direction. So I just hope to do more with it in the years to come, but it is a starting point to help somebody navigate this journey to food, to what to take, to what to ask for when you're in the exam room. You know, I mean, it's literally a roadmap and a guide. And I wanted to make it fun, right? I didn't want this to be all buttoned up. I feel like already, you know, the conventional world is all buttoned up. So I was like, how do we make this fun? So that's where we came up with these crazy names, which we can talk about in a minute. But
as I was reading last night, that's one of the things that I really liked. It's like, Ayurveda, you have kind of your Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and it's a bit kind of dull. You've got boss ladies and savvy chicks. And I was like, this is cool.
I was thinking like, I could say like type one, type 1A, type 2, type 3B. I was like, who wants to do that? You know, but the names describe the types quite honestly, and they're very deliberate in the name. So the first type is a gypsy girl. And the gypsy girl is Vata, very Vata, kidney meridian deficient. Vata folks are creatives, for lack of a better word. They live sort of up in the space, and they're always dreaming and thinking and creating or painting or writing or doing whatever it is they do. And they're not connected to their bodies. And I see that clinically all the time, right? They have a lot of trouble with anxiety and focus. And they're also the patients usually on anxiety medications and ADHD medications. But nutritionally and biochemically, they have a very distinct pattern. They're low in fats, they're low in B vitamins, they're often low in amino acids. And some of that creates that disconnection, you know, and creates that lack of grounding. So my thought was like, well, how do we help Avada get grounded? How do we help a gypsy girl get grounded? Because then she can create, you know, in a productive way. Otherwise, many of them are just sort of up here spinning plates, but not really seeing the tangible results. So that was the gypsy girl. And then from there was the boss lady. And this is the one that has been the most interesting, because we all know boss ladies, like strategic and determined, and like they're leading teams and people, and they're go-getters, and they have 50 lists everywhere. And it's probably the dominant type, but I didn't realize how dominant in our current culture. In fact, I made, like, you know, Randall and others who've helped me with this test and trying to automate the test, I'm like, okay, are we sure our technology is right? Because how can we have this many boss ladies coming through when people are taking this test? But it is what most women are living today, where they feel like they're having to power through and command and direct and lead and just kind of force the issue. But Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine predict all of that, it's going to take a toll. It's going to clog your gut. It's going to clog your liver. You're going to have hormone imbalances. You're going to have more inflammation. Those are our autoimmune patients. Those are our thyroid patients. And so boss ladies have a challenge medically just as much as their personality kind of dictates what's happening medically. So that's the boss lady. Then there's a blend of the two. It's part creative, part boss lady. Those are your entrepreneurs. Those are usually people who are, you know, putting new ideas into action. And so they can do both. They can dream like a creative, but they can plan in a very detailed, strategic way like a boss lady. So they almost have double the issues. So there's that group. And there's the earth mama. And I always joke that the first earth mama I knew was my husband, and he doesn't like that very much. But
I can't imagine why.
I'm not going to tell him. But, I promised him I'd change the name. But he just, I mean, like many women I know, like his mom, quite honestly, just nurtures. I mean, they are the center of a home and the center of a family and the center of a community. People just gravitate to them because they know they're going to fix things or take care of them or whatever else. But those guys can't set boundaries worth anything. And they end up really like putting their own health at risk, putting their own needs at risk. You know, I have to be conscious being married to one that, like, okay, this is where I need to stop asking for things. Otherwise I'm invading this person's core being, you know? So, but they have insulin issues. They have cardiometabolic issues. They struggle with weight. They struggle with depression. They struggle with all kinds of different issues. So that's the earth mama. And then the last type is the nightingale. And the nightingale is fascinating because they're kind of a blend of everything to a certain extent, but that blend has good things and bad things. They're very mission focused and mission oriented and service oriented, but they often crash their immune systems in the process of like trying to serve this bigger purpose or trying to serve the world or things like that. So those are the five types. And
did we do the Savvy Chicks? I think we might have skipped one.
Savvy Chick was the blend of the boss lady and the gypsy girl. Sorry, I didn't mention my name, but that's the blend of the two, the innovators, and I'm one of them, but I live up here sometimes, and then I'm on the go a lot of the time, and I'm sort of dancing between those worlds. So I really have to watch things like my adrenals, my thyroid, my diet, all that other stuff.
And I think these kind of maps are really helpful, right? Because when one can go, hang on, sometimes people I think can be resistant. So I don't want to be put in a box. I'm unique. Right. I'm special. And there can be that. But I think when people can go, actually, this kind of feels like me. And because this feels like me, I can actually see, well, actually, yeah, I do that. And oh, wow. As you were saying, well, kind of your husband, I can watch out for that. Oh, I could, this right. like a kind of fast track to see, actually, these are the physical things that are going to need to be considered and taken care of. So when you're working clinically, how do you use this to empower people, and how much does it inform the protocols that you put together for people?
So because this is resonating so well with everybody in a very different way, just not just lab values and things like that. We're incorporating it into the entire practice across the board. So what we are working towards doing is every patient will be typed. And so I'm working on power types for men and power types for kids as well. Everyone will be typed, so they'll have a framework from which to understand themselves. And then the other way it's working is that because there's so much information when you come to a practice like ours, right? There's so much detail that they get that's often very hard to put together. When we create this framework for them, then they very quickly have a diet plan to follow. They have recipes ready to go. They've got exercise plans ready to go. They have a mind-body strategy ready to go. So as they're navigating their individualities, they have this overarching framework from which to begin their journey. And I think people have loved it because I can, in the patient room, realize, okay, I'm putting it on their plans. You are, you know, you're a boss lady. And as a boss lady, these are our top concerns. And the follow-up question is, well, what do I do about my stress management? Like, what does a boss lady do? Or what do I do? What should I make for breakfast? I'm like, well, here we go. Here's all your boss lady plans. Here's your recipes. Here's your exercise plans, all that other good stuff. So it is a core piece of our practice now. I didn't intend for it to be that, but then you realize that if you're trying, which I am, which you're trying ultimately to empower people, right? To give them power back, then speaking to them in a way that is non-medical is often very helpful, because then they can take that and they can turn that into something very tangible and know how to move forward through their lives. And then sometimes they move on, right? They get a year or two down the road, they've like accepted who they are, they know what works for them, and they're in the rhythm of taking care of themselves, and they know when they lose their power again. They know, like for me, you know, I know when I'm on versus when I go back to feeling the way I felt 20, 25 years ago. So, and I want that same feeling for everybody else. I'm so much older now, but I have 3 or 4 times the energy I had back in my 20s because I've got that formula for me. And when I slip up, it shows in about 2 seconds. So that's the same thing I want for all our patients and for anyone else we touch, is that they understand that formula for them. Speaking in this power type way is a great way to start that conversation. And then they continue to develop that out as they journey through the practice and they journey through their lives.
And I think what it does is it helps you to fast track, I guess, the work you're doing with people, right? Because right. As opposed to having to kind of take a long time to gradually deconstruct each person's picture and figure out and teach one bit at a time, you can give that kind of kickstart. And I think what's also interesting is, I'd love to hear you to speak briefly about, there's the nutrition piece, as you were talking about, the kind of the places that you kind of focus, but you've also touched on some of the psycho-emotional pieces that can be important.
Right.
Maybe
right.
A little bit about how important that can be in both addressing fatigue, but also in sustaining health and wellness.
I think they're inseparable. They're absolutely inseparable. I think that, you know, our chemistry dictates our personality and our emotions, and our emotions dictate our personality and our chemistry. It's like a two-way street. You can't have one without the other. It's like saying, what do I pick, the right hand or the left hand? And I think the problem in medicine today is that we're too focused on the minutiae of chemistry, and we're not really very focused on how it integrates with the rest of the person. And that's why we often miss the mark. And so that was another reason for me wanting to do these power types, because I wanted people to understand creative or the Vatas, you know, they're disconnected, you know, but they're also brilliant, right? They're brilliant in terms of what's going on in their head, if we could pull it out of them. But, you know, helping them understand that that is a fundamental weakness, they have a light bulb moment. They're like, aha, you know, I'm not grounded, so let me do grounding work. Then I feel better. Then I prevent disease. If I prevent disease and feel better, then I don't have anxiety anymore. And then I'm able to focus better. So it's like the spinning wheel, you know, for everybody. The boss lady is like, you know, I'm on the go, but then it's like barking at somebody by 5 o'clock in the evening or yelling at her husband or kids or whoever else. Why? Because she's tapped out. The stress has gone up to here. So if she understands that, okay, well, this is how I have to eat because this is how I'm wired and this is how I have to sleep and this is my stress management, well, then she may have a better relationship with her family or her partner, her friends, right? So for me, the ramifications are huge, you know, because when we don't get these things right on both sides, you know, you don't get the emotional part kind of where it needs to be and understand how it's driving the physical, and we don't get the physical part where it needs to be because it's driving the emotional, then it's like a ripple effect. It goes from, I don't feel great, but I'm powering through, to now it's taking a toll on my kids, it's taking a toll on my business, it's hurting my employees, it's hurting my marriage or my relationship. And you start to see the fragment of what you start to see whatever you create fragment right before your eyes. And instead of letting things get to that point, like taking a step back and understanding, like, this is who I am, these are my limitations, this is where I thrive, you know, these are the things I need to do to thrive, this is where I don't do so well, and really finding that balance so that then you have the energy to put out to everything else that you're responsible for or want to do or have to do, you know.
I'm mindful of time, but a question I'd also just love to touch on is when you're asking people to make changes on quite a few levels at once, right? You're looking at food. We talked at the start how people can be quite resistant to that. Talking about these kind of psycho-emotional changes. What do you see for those that are successful in following through and making those changes? What helps them in doing that? Like either in terms of strategies or personality type or support system that you guys put around it. But like, how can people be successful in making these kinds of changes?
I think the number one thing about making change is self-acceptance and self-awareness. I think more than anything else, I don't think, and I've gotten into arguments with some big leaders about, you know, who are trying to institute change across the board. Change begins, and that's another reason I wrote this book and I want to do more with it. Change begins with full understanding of who you are and acceptance of who you are. And when you have that fundamental level of acceptance, that journey can start to move forward because then everything else you need kind of lines up, you know, and you're open to the knowledge, you know. If you're not open to it and you don't have that level of self-acceptance, then you resist change. You're like, I can control this or I can do this a different way or whatever it is that you're thinking. So fundamentally, I think that to really change, it begins with self-awareness and it begins with self-acceptance. But here's the problem with that. Self-awareness and self-acceptance take deliberate effort and they take time and they take an investment in yourself. And many people just spend day in and day out without investing that time in them, in themselves. So that's where these roadmaps or these books or all the different people who are trying to help people with self-awareness and all the tools that are out there are so critical, you know? So that to me is the fundamental. I think the other thing that is fundamental is lowering and mitigating stress, because you can have all the information in your hand. You can, you know, I can hand you an entire plan of what to do and how to take care of yourself. You're going to go home and stick that in your trash can or on your counter and never look at it again if you do not have the bandwidth and the ability to put that into practice, right? So that's why I began with it's self-acceptance, it's self-awareness, it's then stress management, and it's then a supportive team around you. You know, if you have people around you that eat in a particular way or go out drinking every night. I had an executive who was the life of the party. You know, he's the guy making the deals. He's out, you know, every night. He's the sloshed one. He's the fun one. You know, I had a breakdown in my room. And the breakdown was because I showed him very clearly from a Chinese medicine and an energetic perspective that there was a high amount of grief in his system. And he burst into tears. And the grief was coming from the loss of his father, who was his best friend and his mentor. And he's like, he looks at me and he's like, I'm drinking to numb myself. I'm drinking to be this other person, you know? And so it was that aha moment for him that then made him want to quit drinking, follow the diet, follow the plan. He looks amazing. He's doing amazing. So it's those moments that really make me do what I do. But what happened with him, same thing that's what has happened with myself and so many other people, is that it is self-acceptance of who we are, awareness of what has transpired, and then the ability to take the knowledge and the tools someone gives you and put them into action, and then to be around the right group of people who support you and cheer you along the way.
Fantastic. And of course, as you were describing in your journey at the start, it's a journey, right? And it's a step at a time. Yes. And it's even if the awareness, the information is there on that first appointment, it's having the support and the time to put all of that into action.
Very much. That's why it's a process. It's not take this med and you'll be fixed, right? We don't make that promise. It's visit one, this happens, visit two, visit three, you know, then we go into the second phase of your journey. But it's a very deliberate methodology and practice, but it's one that works and one that I think our patients have continued to benefit from. And I hope even after I'm gone, they'll continue to benefit for years to come.
Fantastic. Dr. Taz, it's been a really enjoyable conversation. Thank you. And just to mention your book, Superwoman RX, but also where can people go to find out more information about you and your work?
Definitely. Well, we've got a lot on the website. It's drtaz.com. It's drtaz.com. And then I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Dr. Taz MD. So it's DRTAZMD. So join me and we'll chat.
Fantastic. Dr. Taz, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.